hear people talking bad about the way we have to live here in this country. Harping on wars we fight, griping about the way things ought to be. Tonight I don't mind them switching sides and standing up for things they believe in. When they're running down my country, man, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down with life, I'm fighting in the paradise. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. You're running down my country, man. You're walking on the fighting side of me. The guy who claims he just don't believe in fighting. And I wonder just how long the rest of us can count on being free. They love our milk and honey, but they preach about some other way of living. When they're running down my country horse, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking down with life, I'm fighting in a foreign diocese. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. When you run down my country, man, you're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down with life, I'm fighting. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. When you run down my country, man, you're walking on the fighting side of me.
Yes, when you're running down my country, you're walking down the fighting side of me. And that's the name of this program here on White Resistance Radio. .com. Well, lots more news and views for our people, and of course those are the European founding settler people of the Dominion of Canada, the United States of America, the Dominions of Australia, New Zealand, the Republic of South Africa, Rhodesia, and all of you who may be listening this morning in the European heartland. Well, some interesting things have been happening. Over the weekend, now it's not quite as horrific as the shootings in the United States, but there were at least 15 people in Toronto sent to hospital because of gunfire. Here is the report from the Toronto Sun. Now, the Toronto Sun is a sort of a right-wing populist tabloid. A little bit more outspoken than the prissy Globe and Mail or the leftist Toronto Star. One of the characteristics of these non-news reports is the way they carefully try to shield the identity of both the victims and the perpetrators. And this is controlled, or you might even say, fake news. I mean, that's what it is. There's no there's no good way to put it. That's what it is. It is highly controlled, fake. News that is so distorted as to actually not give you any information. Here's the news story. I think it's interesting to follow it along and see what they don't tell you. 15 people were injured by gunfire over the weekend. Police Chief Mark Saunders, who's black, said, I find this very bothersome, he said at a press conference on Monday. This is not a normal weekend in the city of Toronto. No, and that's true.
Well, what might have been abnormal about it that what would be different, let's say, from the previous weekend, other than the large number of people killed, shot? Well, here's a hint. What about Caravana? Now, that's been an event in Toronto for about 30 years. It's a celebration of the West Indies, West Indian culture. There's a big parade. This year, women were allowed to dance topless if they wanted. They have reggae bands and calypso bands and floats and so on. It attracts a large number of not just local Negroes, but Negroes from across North America and even from Britain and the Caribbean. Another characteristic not very often mentioned is that Caravana regularly degenerates into violence. Now, that's something we're not supposed to notice. But almost every year, there are multiple shootings. For all the usual murky reasons of black behavior. Somebody from one posse sees somebody from another in a crowd and starts shooting. Doesn't matter that there are uninvolved people in the way who may get hit and probably do get hit. About 10 years ago, in one of these exchange of gunfire, a black nurse from England was hit. I believe she was killed. And while she lay dying on the ground, somebody stole her eyeglasses. Now, as trivial as the incident may seem, there's something profoundly just depraved about it. Anyway, so the chief says this is different from other weekends. Yeah, and why might that be? Well, we won't say about it. Around 5 p.m., emergency crews were called to the Flemington Road and Stockton Road area for reports of a man who had been shot. He was rushed to hospital with serious but non-life-threatening injuries. Okay, what is not told to us? Well, you'd have to know this, but Flemington Road is a heavily black area. Okay. The man, we're not given his name or any description of him. He's sent to hospital in serious condition. What about the perpetrator? Obviously not caught, but is there any idea who he is, what color he was? No. A short time later, a second victim showed up at hospital with injuries. Police searched the area for two gunmen who were last seen running through a nearby Toronto community housing complex, or in other words, welfare housing. Two men who were seen running. Okay. Well, if observers were close enough to know they were men as opposed to women, or orangutans, might we know a little more about them? Like maybe their color? Some general description, rough age, height, or anything like that? No. This is carefully managed and suppressed news. Earlier Monday, five people were shot, two men and three women, at District 45 nightclub on Finch Avenue near Keel Street around 2 a.m. Okay, again, no description of the people, other than the sex. Two men and three women. District 45, it turns out to be, I'm not going to say exactly a nightclub. They call it a nightclub. And the location, Finch near Keel. Now, if you don't know Toronto, you might not know that is a heavily black area. Are you beginning to get the picture? Chief Saunders said that two other victims later showed up at the hospital. They were wounded. The police are investigating. Police found some shell casings there. We had over 100 people at the club, and someone was brazen enough to pull out a gun and start shooting, Saunders said. Okay, now, there were 100 people there, and somebody started shooting, presumably somebody saw that person. Do we have any description of who that person might be? Well, let me put it this way. In a probably all-black nightclub, if that person were white, do you think we would probably hear about it? You bet we would. That would we already be fretting that this might be a hate crime. He said there were more questions than answers, and they want people to come forward with information. It's typical of incidents that involve blacks that witnesses quickly vanish and are not very cooperative. He goes on to say they're not even sure there was only one shooter and one gun. On Monday morning, two people were found shot at downtown Toronto, a church in Adelaide. One man was found lying injured on the sidewalk, and another was found with gunshot wounds. There was a car nearby that was riddled with bullets. No description, of course, of the victims, and no description of any of the perpetrators. On Saturday afternoon, police were called to Liberty Village at about 4:30 p.m. for a report of shots fired and found a man with a bullet wound in the shoulder. Again, no description of the man, no description of who might have shot him. Police also found shell casings and bullet holes in a nearby condo, and were told that a white SUV with several occupants was seen fleeing the scene. Well, again, presumably, if witnesses saw a where they were close enough to see that it was a white SUV with several occupants, there may have been some description of what the occupants looked like, for instance, color. Well, we're not privileged to know that either. Two men were also shot Saturday afternoon at a Wendy's restaurant at Lawrence Avenue and Allen Road. Again, a very heavily black area, but the paper wouldn't tell you that. And no description of who they were or of who the perpetrators are, if there's any descriptions. And then there's a further story about the shooting at the nightclub, and we begin to get just a little more information. So there's an early morning shooting at something called the District 45 Lounge on Keele Street, Keele at Finch. That's a black area. And then there's some woman from Ohio. She says it was crazy, and people hit the floor, and a leaflet found at the scene said admittance was $25 for the event called Unforgettable, the Caravana Afrobeats Party, running from 10 p.m. to 3 a.m. Now, this is the first time in any of the newspaper reports I've seen that there's any hint that this might have something to do with blacks. I suggest by reading between the lines, you might glean that, but honest reporting that just lays out the facts, we don't get that. The event where the shooting broke out was charged $25 for this party. Unforgettable, the Caravana Afrobeats Party. Now the fact that the newspaper report has to refer to a leaflet that was found lying on the ground rather than any sort of interview with the nightclub manager. Further interesting. Anyway, there's just more details of the injuries and the parking lot was littered with cups, broken high heels, makeup brushes and broken glasses, and so on as people fled. Now, this is a perfect example of what I call a non-story. What's the story other than people, unnamed, were wounded? Nobody apparently has died, but and they do list the several places where they were wounded, but absolutely no indication in any description of the perpetrators or of the victims. All of this has to be inferred. And I have to ask, well, why is that? Why the secrecy? Well, the answer is fairly clear. All the secrecy because they're trying to cover up. This is basically more black crime. But you see, in multi-culti Toronto, you know, diversities are going to strengthen all that. we're not privileged to know that. Well, there's another report, and this is from an online news source called Blog TO. Toronto disturbed by a rash of brazen shootings over the weekend, and it covers much the same material that I have already done. And then a reporter asked the chief of police about the potential connection between this weekend's rash of shootings and several major events that happened in Toronto, particularly Caravana. But when the chief said he's not going to cast a light on the Caribbean Festival. Why? I mean, if there's a connection. Anyway, Jessica Dutsas, anyone else just plain pissed at all the shootings in Toronto this weekend, past weekend? I hate that it happened during Caravana weekend, because it's my favorite parade summer festivity, and this feeds into shifty, unfair stereotypes. Oh, really? Shifty, unfair stereotypes. Do people get shot at the Santa Claus parade? No. Why? Well, the crowds and the participants are not primarily black. Do people get shot at a Toronto Maple Leafs hockey game? You get a pretty big crowd at the, I think it's called the Air Canada Centre. Do people get shot coming in and out of? No. Why? Well, okay, well, what would be peculiar about such a crowd? Well, they're overwhelmingly white. The Caravana weekend, the participants are overwhelmingly black. And here's what the chief of police says. He's not going to cast a light on the festival. We can't let these 11 occurrences define because of this event. This is what happened. They are not sanctioned by the Caribbean Carnival at all. And he said there was an increase in volume of people. Well, yeah, they're increasing in volume of people, but there are only 100 people at the nightclub where the seven people were shot. So he said the Caribbean parade did not sanction the killings. Well, of course they didn't. And the noise suggesting they did. But it's an event that brings together, obviously, a bad element, not all people, of course, but a bad element of blacks. I mean, there is a connection. And here we've got this Jessica Dutsas, and I've already quoted her, and she says she hated it happened during the Caravana weekend because it's my favorite parade, summer festivity. And this just feeds into shifty, unfair stereotypes. Does it really? I love that term, a stereotype. A stereotype is nothing more than a generalization based on fact. A stereotype it never predicts that this is the way things will always be. But it is based on fact. It's a generalization. And the generalization would be quite accurate that for whatever reason, the Caravana Festival attracts a lot of shooting. There were far more people in town for the Gay Pride Parade a few weeks back. To the best of my knowledge, nobody was shot during that. Now, I'm not, for one moment, condoning or promoting this celebration of, in most cases, perversion. But for what it's worth, a largely white gathering, a lot of people, so that's not the crowds that, as the police chief suggests, that factors, not the numbers, it's the makeup of the crowd. And not for a second suggesting that all blacks are gun-toting violent people, but some are. And meanwhile, of course, the our hapless mayor, or the hapless mayor of the city of Toronto, is now for more gun control. And what did he say? He's a big guy for confiscating people's guns. All of these initiatives are much needed if we are to stop the spread of guns, help police crack down on illegal guns and those who have them, and address the root causes of gang and gun violence. So the problem is guns.
No,
the problem is people who misuse guns. A ban on guns in Toronto, do you think that's going to do any good? No, it's not going to do any good at all. I'll tell you why. Carrying a handgun is already illegal, unfortunately, in Canada, with very few exceptions. Carrying a handgun from your residence directly to a gun range, okay. If you are a police officer, yes. If you are a certain type of security guard or private detective, yes. But in general, it's already illegal to carry a handgun in Toronto. So, would a law banning handguns, can't have one at all, would that law make people safer? No, because the very people who break the law are not going to obey yet another law. They're already breaking at least two laws, illegal possession of a handgun, and that's they don't have the right to carry it, or illegal carrying of a handgun, and wounding or attempted murder. I mean, those are already laws. They're already violating those. Will one more law get them to obey? Well, of course not. So around and around we go. We can't, and the problem is we will not name the problem. What's the problem? The problem is black criminals. Or the mayor says gangs. Yeah, well, but it doesn't say who the gangs are. The gangs are black. They're not gangs of blonde-haired Icelandic hobbits. They're black. Well, why are blacks in gangs? Well, that's maybe a complicated question, but here's at least the beginning of an answer. What about we start with an 82% illegitimacy rate? The collapse of Negro families in Canada, the United States, in the Caribbean, in England. A sky-high illegitimacy rate, which means that many children, especially boys, are raised without a father or without a father actively in their lives. So who's the role model? Well, role models will be people such as famous basketball players. But, you know, the chance of a kid born at Jane and Finch, that's a heavily black area in Toronto, making it to the NBA, pretty slim. Okay, it could be a rap star. Well, rap music often skirts violence, physical violence, guns, very negative attitude to women, etc. Or a drug pusher, or a member of a gang. Without the discipline of a home and proper guidance, many young Negro males particularly, get involved in gang activity. Now, I'm not suggesting that a single mother cannot raise her children as a single mother and raise them well. That, of course, there are examples of that. But there are equally many, many examples of families that are completely dysfunctional, with some of the young males turning to gangs because in a gang you belong, you have prestige, you have a certain cred or credibility in the neighborhood. But instead of directing the preaching where it belongs, it's spread out through society. Or, well, let's take away legitimate gun owners' guns, or gun collectors, let's take their guns. refusing to address the problem. The problem is not guns. The problem is lawless young Negroes. Again, let's be quite clear, I'm not saying all by any means, but that's the problem. Well, put that way, I mean, that's tremendously politically incorrect.
You can't say that. I mean, what are you, a racist or something?
No, but I'm a race realist. A race realist. Now, and I would challenge. Hey, correct me if I'm wrong. You know, if the perpetrators were not black, if almost all the victims, probably all the victims were black, correct me. You know, if the perpetrators were gangs of blonde Icelandic hobbits, but fine, let's state that. Were the gangs young German boys and girls? If so, okay, fair enough. Let's state that and address it. But of course, they weren't. And in this, as so often, one of the major culprits is the lying, suppressing mass media. And I have said this before, but I think it's well worth repeating. And that is, if he had done nothing else, Donald Trump would deserve our undying praise, because he has, from the very beginning, hammered at the fake news and false news media. The story I read to you today, the extensive story about the shootings, is exactly that. It's false news, or fake news, or really nothing news. If the weather forecast were equally uninformative, tomorrow there's going to be some heavy weather. Well, what does that tell you? It sounds a little ominous, but what should you prepare for? Rain? Wind? Snow? Don't know. A weather report like that would be laughable. Or let's say the sports scores. Last night, the Yankees played the Boston Red Sox in a big game at Fenway Park. There were huge results. A pitcher was removed from the game early. One fan said it was the worst day for the Boston Red Sox ever. Well, you'd be scratching your head and saying, but what was the score? It sounds bad for Boston, but what was the score? Why was the pitcher removed? Were there any good plays? In other words, a story like that wouldn't pass the sports editor's desk, or I guess in these days, computer screen. The writer would be told, listen, this is a load of nonsense. Come and give us the who, what, where, when, why. You know, that's the basics of a news story. Who, what, where, when, why. Well, these stories are particularly sparse on the who. And I don't mean generalities. Five patrons at this nightclub, two women and three men, were wounded. Yeah, well, do they have names? Do we have descriptions of them? Was it a 95-year-old grandmother? Was it a 22-year-old swinger? Come on! Why don't they give us these details? Because this is part of the wholesale media cover-up of inconvenient facts. And one of the inconvenient facts is black crime. I'll tell you why it's inconvenient. Because of the
nonsense, and it's a nonsensical belief that all people are equal. And therefore, if that's true, all people are equal, therefore the results should be equal. But in point of fact, the behavior of blacks this past weekend proved that they were different from whites. We have a big, largely white event like the Santa Claus Parade that doesn't break out in gunfire or the events associated with it. We have sports events that are largely white, like the games of the Toronto Blue Jays or the games of the Toronto Maple Leafs. Big crowds going there and coming out. Almost never is there violence. There aren't shootings, repeated shootings, or even at before and after parties. That's just not the way it is. Well, why can't we focus on the difference? Yeah, and what this requires, it's not a way of blaming blacks or saying, but it is saying, okay, you've got a problem. Your youth are disproportionately involved in violent crime, very often shooting your own people. Now, why is this? Well, one reason is the dysfunctional black family. Okay, then what might be done about it? Well, that's where, instead of always coming up with more reasons to blame racism or to blame, in this case, guns. Yeah, if we could just ban guns in Toronto, all would be well. Well, first of all, it's not the guns that of their own accord decide to shoot people. The guns don't do it. It's perpetrators. That's the problem. But the thing is, if you can't discuss these things, if you can't even name the problem, then you go off on ridiculous tangents, which will not solve the situation for you, or will actually make it worse. So supposing guns were ruled illegal in Toronto, so you couldn't own a gun. Law-abiding gun owners would turn their guns in, perhaps. Meanwhile, Jamaican gangsters, do you think they would? A person who's prepared to already break existing laws, including such trifles as shooting at people and killing people, do you think that they're going to say, well, you know, I just found out I'm not allowed to own a gun in Toronto, so I'm going to pass that, I'm going to take it in. Turn it in. I don't think so. And that's exactly what's been happening. Found a very, very interesting story on my Facebook, and I want to thank the person who sent it to me, a long-time Facebook friend, Ursula Stroh. And it features this particularly nasty, ugly piece of work named Julius Malema. And he's a radical black politician in South Africa. And here he admits that blacks are not native to South Africa. Well, that kind of changes everything. In fact, to make a long story short, blacks and whites entered the land that's now South Africa at roughly the same time. The present blacks coming down from the north, from what's now Rhodesia or Zimbabwe, and the whites coming up from the Cape. The whites didn't take South Africa from the blacks.
Something very, very interesting has happened here in South Africa, and that is that Julius Malema has actually admitted in a speech that the Bantu people are not native to South Africa. Now, this is the same Julius Malema who says stuff like, kill the Boer, and we are not calling for the slaughter of all white people yet. And also that white people stole the land from the blacks and all stuff like that. And now he was here quoted, and I'm going to show you the video right now where he admits that black people are not native to South Africa. So let's just take a look at the video.
We call people Zimbabwe. We call people Malawi. We call people who come from outside Makwerekwere. Whereas we are Makwerekwere ourselves, because we come from where those people come from. None of us come from here. We came from the north and found the koi and the sand here in Southern Africa, and we settled here. The koi and the sand welcomed us here.
Alright, just two things that I have to point out here is, firstly, the Khoisan did not ever welcome the Bantu people here. I'm actually having a conversation this Saturday on a live stream with a colored man who is a descendant of the Khoisan, so that should be very interesting. What actually happened was that the Bantu, when they came here in South Africa, have genocided the Khoisan in what was called as the Defikane, which was where they basically wiped out the entire population of the Khoisan. And then the other thing that I have to point out is the reason why Malema did this is because black people here in South Africa are killing foreign black people at an alarming rate, and he wants to unite these black people, the foreigners or immigrants and the ones that immigrated during apartheid, with each other against this common enemy known as the white man here in South Africa. The narrative being spewed by these politicians like Malema and his like are actually something quite different.
When I said when Jan van Riebeeck landed in the Western Cape, our problems began. It's a historic fact.
So this is former President Jacob Zuma speaking, and as some of you may know, he is a Zulu. And the only real historic fact here is that the Zulu Empire was established in South Africa in the 1800s. And that is roughly seven generations after Jan van Riebeeck came to the Cape. Before that, we know the Zulus came from the Great Lakes area, which is today known as Malawi. In fact, the Dutch were actually building castles here in South Africa long before the Zulus even came near this country. Quite a funny story on that topic. I've been reading a book by an historian called Nathaniel Isaacs, and he actually wrote on Shaka Zulu, the first king of the Zulu Empire. And what happened was he went to Shaka Zulu's hut, and he had this small hut in the middle of the village, but it was a lot bigger than the other people's huts. It was built out of mud and grass. And when Mr. Isaac sat there with his translator, Shaka asked him, so you're from England? And Mr. Isaac replies to him, yes. And Shaka asked him, so is the King of England's house as big as mine? And then Mr. Isaacs wanted to reply, but then his translator told him, no, tell him yes, it is bigger than the King of England's house, otherwise we're going to be killed. So Mr. Isaacs was forced to tell Shaka Zulu that the King of England's house was smaller than Shaka's mud hut. My name is Willem Petzer, and I'm making videos like these on a weekly basis on every Tuesday and Friday. So if you haven't yet, remember to subscribe. So this video will be about the true history of the peoples of South Africa and when each of those people came here. So I would ask you to like and comment and share this video with everyone so that the people may know the true history of South Africa and what actually happened here. Now, of course, I can talk for hours on this topic and what exactly happened, but I really want to keep this video short and manageable so that you guys can share it with your friends. So I'm just going to summarize the history quickly. So the first number that is important to know is 1488, because that was when the first white Europeans came to South Africa, as far as we know. That was before we knew that there were some shipwrecks from Mediterranean countries found in Cape Town. But in any case, that's a topic for another day, but you can go look it up. It's very, very, very interesting. One thing that I have to point out is that no black South African was ever enslaved, or any of their ancestors. As you can see on this map, the transatlantic slave route never came here to South Africa. And the reason for that is very simple. In the first place, when the Dutch colony was set up in Cape Town, there were no black Africans near the South African colony. And also the Dutch governor of Cape Town made slavery illegal about 150 years before Abraham Lincoln in the United States did. The reason for this was because under Dutch religious law, if a slave became a Christian, he was not allowed to be a slave anymore. So people tried to keep Christianity away from their slaves, which was mostly Malayans in South Africa, for the lack of black people, and because they didn't want them to become Christian, so that they had to be freed. And then later the governor just decided, okay, let's just make all slaves free in South Africa. Another very important thing to know is that the British and the Nguni peoples, who were mostly the Zulus, the Xhosas, and the Ndebeles, came to South Africa roughly at the same time. What happened with the Nguni people is they basically massacred or genocided the Khoisan people here in South Africa and killed all of them. A very conservative estimate would be that they killed about 2 million Khoisan people and drove them almost into extinction. Then, at the Great Track time, they sold the land they took from the Khoisan to the Boers. Many of these contracts are known and are still available in hard copy today. The Ndebele people, who were by far the most violent of the Nguni people, under their king Mzilikazi, was driven back over the Limpopo River during the Great Trek by the Voortrekkers. But as we know, during the time of apartheid was a time when the most immigration from all African countries came here to South Africa, and that led to the Nguni peoples coming back here to South Africa, as well as some other tribes like the Vendas and the Tsongas and the Shangaans, who only came here to South Africa in the 20th century. It's very funny that the current president of South Africa, Cyril Ramaphosa, is a Venda, one of the people that came here almost 300 years after the Dutch, is now saying that we must give back the country to our people. And by our people, of course, he means blacks. But his people, the Vendas, were not in South Africa until very, very recently, long after the Dutch. If you enjoyed this video, please be sure to like and subscribe. And also, if you enjoy my work, consider becoming a Patreon. All the links are in the description. Also, I would like for you to follow me on my social media platforms. The links are in the description as well. Thank you very much, guys. Goodbye.
And that's a very informative video, and I hope you caught the information that when the Bantu, or the present black tribes, or majority black tribes, came south in the 18th century, they genocided the previous tribes. The Khoi, who were quite small people, they were the Bushmen. So this land was not, from time immemorial, black. Well, this is Paul Crown, and you're on the funny side of me. Going to take a musical break now, and I'm going to play some music by on a more upbeat level by a great country and western singer, now dead, who gave us the Bakersfield sound. And this is from Bakersfield, sometimes called Buckersfield, Buck Owens. This is Paul Prong, and you're on the funny side of me.
Oh, the sun's gonna shine in my life once more. Love's gonna lift here again. Things are gonna be the way they are.
Something very, very interesting has happened.
Life's gonna lift here again. Life's gonna lift here. Life's gonna lift here. Life's gonna lift here again. singing, but I'm gonna live here again. I hear bees a humming, and I know the days are coming, but I'm gonna live here again. I'm gonna live here, but I'm gonna live here, but I'm gonna live here.
Just the kind that fit my dreams and plans. Now the pace we're living
every dream come true. And my heart skips a beat when we walk down the street. I feel a trembling in my knees. And just to know you're mine until the end of time makes my heart skip a
there by Bucko and the Buckaroos. This is 12 from here on the Fighting Side of Me. Back with the game tomorrow, same time, midnight Eastern Time. The show is repeated at 8 in the morning and 4 in the afternoon. All of those are Eastern Standard Time. And I sign off tonight, as I always do, with the anthem of the real Canada, the Maple Leaf Forever. This is Paul Fromm.
In days of yore, from Britain shore, would the dauntless hero came and planted firm Britannia's flag on Canada's fair domain. Here may it wave our boast, our pride, and joined in love together, the thistle, shamrock, rose entwined, the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf forever. Greenland here, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen and heaven bless the maple leaf forever. At Queenston Heights and Lundy's Lane, our brave fathers side by side for freedom, homes and loved ones dear firmly stood and nobly died. And those dear rights which they maintained, we swear to yield them never. Our watchword evermore shall be the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf forever. God save our queen and heaven bless the maple leaf forever. Our fair dominion now extends from Cape Race to Nootka Sound. May peace forever be our lot and plenteous store abound. And may those ties of love be ours, which discord cannot sever, and flourish green o'er freedom's home, the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen and heaven bless the maple leaf forever.